Actually, in the year 2000, there was a string conference in Santa Barbara, and David Gross was asking people to think of what are the 10 most interesting problems in string theory to be solved in the next millennium. And in a rare moment of shyness, I did not participate. But mine would have been the phases of gravity. Now, I've geared the talk to the audience here, participants of the lattice gate theory, but it's not a handicap to know the subject independently. So the idea is going to be the following. I'm going to start by somehow motivating and reminding you of some of the things which have been done when we studied gate theories. Gate theories were, in the beginning, a mystery, and gradually their properties unraveled. And one of the very useful ways of making progress was actually to try on the lattice to analyze in various situations, strong coupling, weak coupling, what are the possible phases of the system. The proofs were not, in some cases, as rigorous as they are in certain circumstances today. But I think the bottom line is that all the qualitative behavior which gate theories can give us were actually identified by doing the theory on the lattice. And I will remind you on that, and it's in this spirit that I would like to discuss also the analysis of the phases of gravity. The problem is very difficult, but still trying to see, identify who are the main players or who could be the important degrees of freedom, when is who more important than someone else, is something that will give rise to an interesting picture. So let's start with the phases of gate theories, and I remind you from the lattice. One had Zn gate theories, one had compact, non-compact U1 gate theories, one had non-abelian gate theories, one put them on the lattice, and eventually one identified a very qualitative cocktail of ingredients out of which or which dictated the infrared and ultraviolet dynamics of the theory. And electric charges, of course, it's not a big surprise, they were there ab initio. But then magnetic charges were identified in one way or another. Dionic charges were identified in certain systems, and it was realized that one can get that a gate theory can have oblique confinement, which, if you wish, is the most general type of confinement. That's when dions condense. But it can also have the Higgs phase when electric charge condenses. It can have the confining phase when magnetic charges condense, and it can also have nothing condensing, and then it's going to be in the Coulomb phase, which was the usual electrodynamics with which one started. And as I said, actually the qualitative picture which came out is correct, and it's with us till today, even with more theoretical, computational, and other devices. So let me remind you on the type of argumentation. So John, in his lecture, also reminded you of the strong coupling, and I will continue a little bit in his tradition, and I will not mention that Kogut, Banks, and Meyerson, for example, did work which actually had a large influence on people on the field. They looked at the strong coupling of the system, and afterwards not only at strong coupling. The Hamiltonian, as you know well, in that case, the magnetic component is a bounded operator, so you can safely throw it away, and you remain with the electric charge. And then you get that your configurations are sum over loops. You can think about it in a Lagrangian formulation or in a Hamiltonian formulation, but you have sum over closed loops where each loop carries a certain tension. And then you can parameterize that. John discussed in detail how you mapped it in some cases to a spin system, but you could also map it more coarsely in some cases to a complex field, sometimes more than one complex field. So this is its kinetic energy. Its exact interactions were not so obvious, but what was easier to get a handle on was the fact that it had a certain mass. And this mass actually, this effective type of mass depended, if you wish, on the temperature or on the coupling which the system had. And the basic idea which was there was, if you look at the string configuration on the lattice, because as we said, let's this, for example, for the electric fields, they have a fixed tension in a non-compact, in a compact group, definitely. You look at that, so you know that it costs you energy to make a string, and the longer you make the string, the more heavy the energy is, so you would think the more unlikely it is to have this configuration. However, the opposite thing which works is the fact that you have lots of such strings. So if you want, think of yourself sitting at a certain site, you can make choices in D dimensions to which side, which direction you choose, allow this to multiply, and you are going to get an exponential behavior in terms of the energy, and the length is proportional to the energy. So you're going to get the information that it's true that it costs a lot of energy, but you're also gaining a lot of entropy by doing that. And when you do the calculation of course, maybe I should remind, things were more complicated. As you know, you have to be careful. You have to have non-backtracking random walks. You can't just use what is familiar from random walks, which was behind this type of terms, not taking into account, again, the more complicated potential. But the basic feature was, yes, the energy grows with L, so does the entropy, and as you when you increase the temperature enough, it is advantageous for you actually to condense strings. And in that case, you go to another phase, and depends what is the object which condenses, and if you are in a situation where the objects which condense have magnetic charge, then you get the dual Meissner effect and you are led to confinement. But in any case, this type of argument of weighing entropy and trying to identify who are the key players from the original U1 type calculation, which I mentioned before, was afterwards generalized to ZN systems where you had both electric and magnetic charges, and if you put in theta parameters, you also have dions, so you can just identify which operators are going to condense, and or which are the relevant operators in the system, and you find from that the various phases of the system. So this is the type of spirit which I'm going to maintain in discussing the phases of gravity. And again, in order to whet your appetite, especially that I will remember that the first talk I heard here in this lattice, the speaker promised to solve n equal 4 supersymmetry on the lattice. He then told me it couldn't be on my talk after I asked him if he can really do it. And then he said, yes, it was on my talk, but I didn't mean it that seriously. But in any case, I want to whet your appetite and to that. So assume that you have a very good student and you ask him to solve a problem. What are the energy levels of a particle in a circle? You get what is written there. He knows that. Then ask him, please look at the energy levels of a free field theory on a torus T3. Take it some large torus. There is some scale L in the problem. How does the entropy go? So, as I will remind you, the entropy goes, if the field theory is two-dimensional, would go like e to the 1/2. Now assume that same student would come to you after you gave him as a next assignment to do d equals 3, n equals 4 supersymmetric Young-Mills, or SUN Young-Mills, on S3. And assume he would come into your office and he would show you the following behavior of the energy levels. My first reaction would be to throw him out. Because if you look at this structure of energy levels, so here we have the entropy as a function of the energy. What does it say if that's what he came? It says that we have a four-dimensional system, which is actually 10-dimensional. I'll remind you why that is the case. So if you see a bend going like e to the 9/10, it means that the field theory is actually, in space-time dimensions, 10-dimensional. So you have a four-dimensional system, and it's actually 10-dimensional. This can't be the case. Imagine that we are tricking ourselves, that we're actually doing all the time low-energy experiments, and actually we ourselves live in a higher dimension. So that's really something which couldn't be accepted. Then, worse, the entropy increases linearly with the energy. That's like an infinite dimensional field theory or something else, maybe even, God forbid, string theory. And he was just doing n equal 4 supersymmetric Young Mills. Then he goes on and he gets an energy which is where power which is even larger than 1, which I'll remind you is associated with black holes, with Schwarzschild-type black holes. So that's even worse. And only at the end he shows you, okay, there is some energy where we get back e to the 3/4, which is what you think should have been all the way. Now, after the talk today, I hope you will get a feeling why actually that student, which I threw from the office, I shouldn't have. He actually got the right answer. But it's very difficult, I think, to identify this answer just thinking in terms of the tools of gate theory. So even though it's a gate theory or a generalized QCD-like problem, the tools which make us believe that this is indeed the case come from somewhere else. But the reflection is directly on a problem of gate theories. Okay, so that said, we are going to discuss something of the phases of gravity. Now, first of all, like any new campaign uses many times the tools of the old campaign, we always learn that there are surprises. Things are a little different, but sometimes a lot is also the same. The first issue is that when you actually discuss thermodynamics and gravity, we'll see it's not such an easy concept. There are many things which don't go well between thermodynamics and gravity. In particular, we are used to do thermodynamics in a fixed background. And here, when you pump too much energy into your background, the background back reacts, black holes are created, and your first assumption didn't work. So that's one surprise which you should be ready to. You should be ready to face. Another surprise is that thermodynamics is built on extensivity, while in what is going to come out of gravity, we know from black holes, is that actually quantities of black holes or high energy objects in a fixed volume actually become holographic. So these problems are going to be challenges. The instability, which usually goes under the name of the Jeans instability, and the issues of holography are things which one will have to address. But nevertheless, let's go ahead. I will mention them when they come, when I need them. They do limit the issue of what are the phases in gravity, what is a good study of that. Another issue which also is limiting, which I won't discuss today, is the issue of observables, how exactly to define observables, how to handle situations which are not local. All this stuff has to be handled when this is done in a more complete way, but I'm going to ignore it. And or just put it in when we need it. And I'm mainly going to introduce you to the ingredients of the cocktail which makes the degrees of freedom relevant for gravity as we are familiar with them today. Now, there is another thing which I can't avoid. Rachel, don't have to look. I'm interested, I believe that there is a problem in string theory that it has a scale. I think that there should be, when we talk about phases of gravity, another phase where that scale is not there. That means the limit alpha prime goes to infinity. That's a fascinating issue. There are other issues like topological phases, which were discussed here in connection with supersymmetric theories on the lattice. That's also a phase of gravity with an enlarged symmetry. And actually, in the first papers on the subject, people mentioned that they think about that as like in the weak interactions, the unbroken symmetry phase, the same thing was thought about as topological phases. But these are fascinating issues which I will not discuss today. So we are going to mainly focus on the cocktail and then see how far we can get. So the first ingredient of the cocktail is the following, and the point of view I'm going to think, still the framework I'm going to think about it is string theory, a theory which claims to take over gravity and solve its apparent problems. So we know that string theory speaks to us today, or we should speak to us today, because it also has massless excitations, and it has various massless excitations, like a photon, like a graviton, like gauge particles, like the elusive dilaton. But these objects are massless objects which come out of string theory. So let us first discuss one ingredient of the cocktail, which is just fields in an effective field theory. How do we know, what do we know about how the entropy behaves as a function of the energy, so, or temperature? So let me remind you, let's put this in a finite volume. So there will be a scale parameter L, and D is the dimension of space-time. And let's us assume that the theory has a finite number of thresholds. I said massless particles, but you can think of any theory where even the particles are massless, but the number of particles which are there as fundamental degrees of freedom, confined or not confined, but fundamental degrees of freedom, is actually a finite number. So you can go to energy scales which are well above that scale and forget about them and treat them as if they are massless. In that case, you know that you would expect the entropy of the system to go by the equipartition theorem, like the number of degrees of freedom in the problem. You would assume extensivity, so you would say it goes like the volume, that's what we get in field theory. And then the only other scale in the problem is the temperature, so the temperature would be to the appropriate power, so to render this quantity dimensionless. And that would be the power d minus 1, which is a spatial power. So you would get n and L times t, which is a dimensionless quantity to the power d minus 1. From the same type of arguments, the free energy of the system, or the energy, would have an extra t because the energy has a scale of like the temperature. So now if you want to eliminate the temperature out of this and you plug it back in, you get that the entropy in the field theory with a finite number of thresholds goes like the number of degrees of freedom to the power 1 over d multiplied by L times E, the dimensionless quantity, to the power d minus 1 over d. So in two dimensions, that's the source of the 1/2. In four dimensions, that was the 3/4. And when we got the 9/10, and I said, oops, that means 10 dimensions, that was the source of 10 dimensions. So this is the behavior that one would expect. Now, this would be, as I said, true in a theory where the number of thresholds is finite. But when we go to string theory, that's not the situation. We can produce all the time new particles. They sit on the Regge trajectories, and I'm taking here the attitude of discussing the system where I can very near the coupling zero situation. Of course, when the coupling changes, the system changes, there are many very interesting effects which occur. So now we go to the strings. So this is the second component of the cocktail. First component are the effective degrees of freedom of the field theory. Their entropy goes like a power of an energy, which is smaller than 1. Maybe I should mention, if the scale is L, of course these degrees of freedom will be activated once the energy is larger than 1 over L. So first you need to begin to excite them, so the energy has to be larger than 1 over the length scale. Okay, what happens in strings? So I'm taking the attitude of free or nearly free strings. So the entropy, as we gave just from the lattice gate theory calculation, counting random walks, goes exponentially with the energy. That's the total number of degrees of freedom at energy E plus delta E, which means the entropy would have a leading term going like the energy. That means a power which, if it would have been a field theory, which it is not, would be like what you would get when D goes to infinity, because then that power would become of order 1. And here it is 1. Now there are other two parameters which appear. So one is would be, what is that coefficient of E? And then there is the prefactor, which is not exponential, it's just power-like. And then there is another factor before them. I don't know where I will reach in this talk, but let me tell you that each of them has a role to play. The prefactor is important, there is physical information in it. The numerical coefficient before that also gives us information. But we start first with the gross effects, and then as time permits, we will go to the more detailed structure. So if we look at the entropy, the leading term, if I forget about the powers, is going to be beta times E. And that in particular means, if you remember how to relate the temperature with the entropy, that this system, once this is a correct description of the entropy, has a fixed temperature, maximal temperature. Now, the thermodynamics is that it turns out that when you pump in energy, the energy doesn't go to kinetic energy, if you wish. It goes to produce a higher and higher excited state. And as we said, the number of thresholds is infinite, so you can always get a state which is that large and produce it. Okay, now We usually don't like to face bounds. It's against our nature. We like to go break bounds. And actually, the first place where this was appeared was in QCD. Khabib and Parisi realized after Hagedorn's work that there is a problem in QCD. What's happening? It has a Hagedorn spectrum. That's where it was derived. What do you do with that? And what they said, well, this is not the true number of degrees of freedom. It's really that QCD is built out of constituents. There's going to be, these are called quarks. They were then not totally legal, but still people talked about them a lot. And that these quarks will actually be the correct way to count the number of degrees of freedom after a phase transition, which we heard in this workshop many, many times, should occur above a certain temperature. So all this tells you is that you are not counting the correct degrees of freedom beyond a certain energy. There is no maximal temperature. It's not that you can't raise the energy and the temperature as much as you want. Sorry, the temperature as much as you want when you raise the energy. Nobody's blocking you. You can do that. However, the reason is something is building it. And that is the reason that also in string theory, people who work with it and try to find what is beyond the Hagedorn spectrum, they have always, I think, in mind this lesson of QCD. What is the stuff strings are really made of? Now, maybe they're not made out really out of anything else. But if they are made, one always hopes that by trying to cross the Hagedorn bound, we'll get information. And we will today cross the Hagedorn bound in a very interesting manner, but not in a manner which is universe, which is the only possible universality way to do it. Because, as we say, the problems will still be there. Now, actually, when you look at this system, you find that its specific heat is infinite, not surprising if the temperature is constant, cannot be raised. Now, actually, non-leading effects, which I hope I have a little time to mention, things will enter. There will be an example, if you wish, of the IR-UV connection. We will see that large objects actually carry lots of energy, and the way that they behave determines if the specific heat is positive, if the specific heat is negative. This will come from, will depend on prefactors and other such structure. And the main idea which will come is that we are going to cross the Hagedorn transition, but we are going to cross it clad in a black hole armor. That's the way to cross this transition. And actually, the work, for example, of Horowitz and Polchinski here was indicating that that is what could happen. That is, and I will describe it now, how black holes can go, can take over when you have strings. Maybe I should also mention that closed and open strings have the same Hagedorn temperature, but maybe not right now. So let's look, as we have now, up to now we had two ingredients in our cocktail. One ingredient was normal field theory, the effective theory coming out of strings. This would be that part here. Here the specific heat is positive. You can calculate it. You find the well, if you remember this, that the temperature dependence on the energy goes like the energy to the power 1 minus the coefficient which appears in the entropy. And if the coefficient of the energy dependence in the entropy is smaller than 1, like it is for a field theory, then 1 minus alpha will be a monotonically increasing function. So in this case, you are going to get a positive specific heat. And then eventually, when you begin to reach an energy where you excite the strings, before you only saw their massless excitations, but eventually you're going to excite the strings, at that stage they take over, and this happens at an energy of the order of the string scale times the volume. The volume is fixed in this problem. I will discuss its issues of the volume when they become relevant, and they will become soon relevant. Now we said that these two ingredients lead us with a question that it seems like the system has a maximal temperature. What do we do with that? So now we add the third ingredient, and that is the ingredient in the cocktail of the black holes. In that case, we get this new surprising type of information, and actually this new surprising type of information came by allowing general relativity trying to mimic laws of thermodynamics. I don't know, little did it know that afterwards thermodynamics may revolt a little bit against it. But in the black hole and so on, thermodynamical motivation led to the idea that a black hole has an entropy and that this energy is proportional to the area and not the volume of the system. If you express this in dimensionless quantity, so in the units that I'm choosing where I'm taking out g Newton and replacing it for g string squared times l string to the power, which is a dimension minus 2, which an appropriate dimension d would just be d minus 2, what you get is that the entropy goes like 1 over g string squared, and then the dimensionless quantity, the radius of the black hole in string units to the power d minus 2. The mass of the black hole, which you can define given a certain radius for the black hole, as that mass for which the potential becomes of order 1, then is this very similar, except that because of dimensions, the powers are a little different, has the same 1 over g string squared behavior, and then it has 1 over ls, which was chosen as a scale, and then it has r0 over ls to the power d minus 3. So when you plug this in, just like we here think of this is entropy and energy, just like we did it for the field theory case, get rid of r0 over ls for a moment, then and try to express the entropy as a function of the mass, the energy, you will see that you get the appropriate power of g string, and then you get m times ls, dimensionless, to a power d minus 2 over d minus 3. If you remember in that graph, we had 8 sevenths, so 8 sevenths would mean d equals 10. So this would be an entropy appropriate for black holes living in 10 dimensions. And this is characteristic. As long as you are above three dimensions, it tells you that the coefficient which appears in the entropy is larger than one. Now, in particular, that will tell you, because it's larger than one, that, for example, what about the specific heat? It's going to be negative. Because now when you take, write the temperature, it's going to go like one minus that coefficient, and that's going to be a power smaller than zero. So that means the temperature goes down as you increase the energy, which means the specific heat will become negative. Not something very reassuring if you want a well-defined physical system and model it in any way, definitely by a field theory. Now, as we discussed, the issue in this cocktail is you let the actors play against each other. So the effective massless degrees of freedom are already out of the game. The strings were dominating, but now the black holes, which have a more impressive way of increasing their entropy with energy, they want to play also. And indeed, you can ask, can they play together? So notice that string entropy goes like the mass of an object, which I call the black hole, times L string. Black hole goes like the mass of the energy times R naught. So if you want the two things to be together, what you need, and that's very physical, R0 to be of the order of Ls. So it's possible, when R0 is of the order of Ls, to have a crossover and go from one regime to another. So, as I said, if you want to have the black hole and the string have the same behavior, what you find that this will occur when R0 equals Ls. Now, go ahead and plug this back or into all the formulas we use. So in particular, when R0 over Ls is 1, then you find that g string squared times the mass of the black hole times Ls to some power is also 1. And the only dimensional dependence on dimensions appeared here. So if you want this to be order 1, that means that if this is 1, then this is for any number of dimensions, you would get the condition that g string squared times MLS equal 1. And I think that gave the people who suggested this more confidence that indeed this is a universal type of feature which was discovered here. So if you wish, there are two ways you can view this. You can look at the system, say, because the string coupling is some parameter at this stage in the model, so look at it as fixed and ask at which energy will the transition occur, and when will it occur in a transition so you can rely on perturbative string theory, so it would be when MLS is 1 over G string squared. So if G string squared is a small number, you can do string perturbation theory, and that would be a very heavy, but finitely heavy, massive black hole where the transition will occur. You can look at it in the opposite point of view. You can look at the mass and say, let's follow this particular excitation as we change G string. And then you would find that when G strings is 1 over MLS, that is when actually the classical black hole may begin to look like a very excited string. One of the flies in the ointment in this analysis was that this energy, as we said, is very high. And we said we are doing essentially free string theory. And we said we have a random walk. So the object was very, very large and not very small, not contained in L string. And then the same also, Sovich and Polchinski, also Veneziano and Damour, try to see what actually happens when you add gravitational corrections. Will the system begin be contained, or will it just grow? And they found indications that the process starts, at least. The system is not becoming larger. There is an appropriate minus sign to make it smaller. But if you wish, when this is one of the things which, when eventually a model would be solved more exactly, we would be happy to see this being really worked out in detail. So we have now a situation where the Hagedorn, if we look at the three components of the cocktail, the Hagedorn temperature is not a problem anymore, but not in the way we wanted. In other words, we started by increasing the energy, the temperature increased. Then there was a region of strings where the temperature was essentially constant. Then the black holes took over, and now because of the negative specific heat, the temperature is going down. So no worry, you're not going to go, you can't go beyond the Hagedorn temperature because the temperature is now decreasing. However, you're not happy because you have a system which has negative specific heat, and if you have any fantasy of modeling that by some field theory or something, it's not going to work. So this is where the situation sits. Now, does the problem show its own, carry the seeds of its own destruction? So there is some warning to tell that the picture, I think Tom called it here, I heard it the first time, in asymptotic darkness. So is our future only as darkness? And is dark, how dark is dark? So if you look at this particular thing, you see that you run into a problem as you increase the energy further. I told you that to do thermodynamics with gravity is a little bit tricky. The problem will become tricky in particular when you're working in a fixed volume, as we do in thermodynamics, and the black hole begins to, which could form, begins to envelope your whole system. At that stage, you can't kid yourself that there is no back reaction anymore. There must be back reaction in that system. So there exists an energy, which is related to the gene's instability lengths, for which anyhow this treatment, as cavalier as is wont, it just doesn't stand even on its own, within its own rules. So what does one do then? And actually, Hawking and Page at the time came with a device. Now the device is not universal, but it's very useful. They said, and we are talking about, we are in a QCD thing, so they said, let's confine somehow energy. How do you do confinement? You introduce an R squared piece in the metric. What you actually do is you make the, if you look at the temperature, now not homogeneous in your space, but as a function of some distance, which is towards the end of your volume, redshift it so that when you go very far away, your system is essentially frozen. And in such a situation, you have a gentle or a nice infrared regularization of your system. Of course, this is not the problem of a Schwarzschild black hole in flat space. That still is an open problem. It's a problem of a black hole in a regulated space. And try and handle or look what happens to this diagram when you add another actor into the game. For the case of a Schwarzschild black hole alone, we don't know what to add, and that's where we are stuck. But if we live in a circumstances where anti de Sitter is something we want, or let's introduce it as some infrared regulator, then we can go on. Now, I should mention here that not only specific heat is negative, but if you try and build a constant, usually you do thermodynamics by having a finite energy density. But in this case, you will not be able to have a finite energy density because for a given energy, your volume is fixed. So you just can't do thermodynamics without changing something. Okay, I recapitulate some of the issues which came up here. I said you have problems with the gene's instability. You can't really develop a thermodynamic limit. For that, we are using now an infrared regulator. Another issue is I wasn't so naive in introducing these ingredients in the cocktail. To have a string in addition to an effective field theory is fine. Both are players in the same string theory. But when you introduce black holes, you are changing the topology of the system. In particular, if you're thinking in a Euclidean manner, like Hawking thinks, and many of his collaborators, then you see that the topology which you have at a finite temperature with a cylinder changes to, let's say you heard, I hope, about the cigar topology, which is characteristic of a black hole. And you are allowing two different topologies to interplay together. That is not obvious. I mean, in a sense, the question is here, like when we teach the Klein paradox, we teach our students that in relativistic field theory with interactions, you can't keep in a fixed number operator sector. You have to mix the number operators. Now, there it's a theorem. The question is, do we have something similar in gravity? Namely, is it necessary to mix topologies, or maybe it's just because we fantasize about it and we want it to happen, but maybe we don't have to. Actually, it turns out that in ADS-CFT, if it is correct, then you have to allow the mixture of topologies. So to me, that's one of the key lessons, let's say, of ADS-CFT. If it is true, it's nice if it would be derived independently. If it is true, then it forces a mixing of topology. I discussed the random walk issue, and now we are going on to increase the energy, but we are going to change the armor. We are not going to use the armor as a Schwarzschild black hole, but we are going to use it as an armor, an anti-de Sitter black hole. And with it, we are going to increase both energy and now temperature. So this is going to be a system which is well behaved. So if you look at so we are regulating the system, we are putting it, we are changing the metric to be anti-de Sitter. I don't know, more things to give you a feeling that it's like a box. A massless particle in anti-de Sitter reaches the boundary in a finite amount of time. So characteristic of a box. Not true for massive excitations. For them it still takes infinite amount of time. But a massless particle would do that, so what is called the optical volume of the system is finite. So it's not exactly a finite system, but it has many properties of a finite system, and in particular, it's a great infrared regulator. I remember there was a period when people also sought for lattice gate theories to use anti-de Sitter. Before this was done, people were thinking maybe put this on anti-de Sitter, maybe it would help to regulate. But I don't know if anything ever came out of it. So how does a metric of anti-de Sitter 5, process 5, look like? It's a 10-dimensional system, and I've written the metric here. The only thing I want you to notice is the component G00, which is a component of the metric. From this you can deduce the temperature, and if you look at the temperature, you see it depends on R, and with this R squared confining potential, you see how the temperature beyond the scale R, which is the curvature of ADS, begins to drop to zero. And in particular, when R goes to infinity, you're frozen. You're not exciting anything there. Yes, please. That's a string. I don't know if I should allow string questions. But, yeah. No, how do... okay, so I'm answering now to a more expert in ADS-CFT. What happens is if you calculate free energies, etc., in ADS, they blow up. They still blow up. However, when you take the difference, for example, between the black hole configuration, which we're going to discuss, and the thermal ADS, that is finite. So if you look at competitions and at relative contributions to free energy, they are already finite. And then there are ways also how to handle, which I don't want to enter here, how to handle, I can give you references, how to handle this finite, this infinite thing, which also happens for the vacuum manifold itself. I think it... I told you, massless particles go, massive particles, for example, take forever to travel to infinity. So in that case, it's clearly I can't put...
It's not a question about geometry, it's a question like how do you define your system by boundary conditions.
Okay, maybe I don't understand exactly what... You want to solve Laplace equation in this background? You can. You ask what are the eigenvalues in the presence of thermal ADS, there are gaps. No, but that's the question I thought you were asking. You want to solve a quantum mechanical problem in the presence of that system. So it's solvable, you get a spectrum, the spectrum is very well gapped. If you want to solve it in the presence of a black hole, you get something else. Now, another configuration which sits inside the this system is a black hole. A black hole can sit inside ADS5 cross S5. The black hole has a modified, if we look at the time component, has a modified piece here. So there was the confining R squared part, but then there is an extra piece. And you know that black holes, you identify them by having a horizon, and the horizon happens when this thing vanishes. And this thing, at a given, I will describe in a moment more details about that, but at a given temperature, if this black hole is not singular, then actually, except at one point, it has two different solutions to this equation because it's quadratic. So this is a black hole. It sits inside ADS. It can be written. It's a solution with the same boundary conditions to the problem. And it has, when it exists, it has two different horizons. What is known about this? So first, what is known is that this object appears only above a certain temperature, which is of the order of the appropriate scaled cutoff. Before, it's singular. This object doesn't exist at all. There is no black hole inside. It has a conifold singularity. So now let's think the same type of ideas that we had about ingredients and playing games with different ingredients of cocktails, let's do on the gravity side. So when we are looking at temperatures which are smaller than 1/(curvature), and actually we heard in several talks here, when geometrical ideas are allowed, we can apply them, and this happens for large toothed coupling in very large values of n. So in the regions where you are allowed to apply this, what you find is that you can have these configurations, a thermal ADS, which is just ADS with one part of it being S1, and when it's allowed, the black hole. Let's now be in a temperature where the black hole is not allowed. And let's try and calculate what is the entropy of the system. The entropy of the system, if you remind yourself of your basic electrodynamics, is beta dd beta of log z minus ln z. That's what the entropy is. Now, because thermal ADS is homogeneous in the sense that the temperature is fixed, then what you see is that your function vanishes. It's a large n calculation where it's applied, and you get zero entropy. So you are in a situation where you have a system which carries zero entropy. We didn't yet discuss, but I know in the back of your mind that you all know, you heard the various lectures here, that n equal 4 supersymmetry is for large SUN with large Kruft coupling is supposed to be the dual theory. And that's supposed to have n squared degrees of freedom. So here you have only degrees of freedom which are come of order 0. Then, I will come back to that and mention something about it. Then we increase the temperature. First, the black hole is allowed to appear as a non-singular configuration, but it's young and it loses the competition. Then you increase the temperature a little more, that depends on the number of dimensions when that happens, and the black hole actually beats the ADS, and it now dominates. The moment it dominates, what you First of all, you notice that, as I said, once the temperature is above a certain number and the black holes exist, there are two of them. One is a small black hole whose radius is smaller than the curvature of ADS, and one is a large one. The small one has a negative specific heat. It's just as bad as the Schwarzschild black hole. So it's not that one that we were looking for, and it's okay, it's a small black hole. So for small black holes, we didn't get anything new. However, if you look at the large black hole, whose radius becomes increasingly larger than the curvature, then this system has positive specific heat. And this is the armor with which we are going now to sail. So unlike the situation where we had a small black hole in 10 dimensions, which had a negative specific heat, or this negative specific heat ADS, there exist large black holes which have positive specific heat. When you count, do the same calculation to find how many degrees of freedom they have n squared degrees of freedom. How come this function is not homogeneous? This function is not homogeneous because the place of the horizon in Euclidean formulation depends on the temperature. So now when you take these derivatives, you get a result. And actually you get a nice result. You get, for some reason, a result, which I won't elaborate here, which is a result that the entropy is e to the 3/4. So again, don't be surprised it's of order n squared. That's because the horizon, its place depends on the temperature. So when you will take the derivatives, it's not anymore homogeneous. There's going to be an answer, and that answer is of order n squared.
Can you remind me again what n
came in? I beg your pardon, what is?
Can you remind me again what n came in?
I think I will refer to you to the lectures before, ND3 brains, n of SUN. Do you remember that?
Sure.
That? Okay. That's the same n. It's the same system.
It was.
Yeah, it's the same system. I just didn't, because you had already several lectures, I didn't go into detail about the MAC, the dictionary, how the coupling G squared.
I have another question, actually. I mean, is R plus and R minus emerges a solution where you said basically the metric component of T is zero?
Yeah.
Shouldn't I think of them as two different event horizons on the same space?
No, these are two different solutions, yeah. Two different black holes, and you have to check each one separately. Now, actually, the fact that you get a power e to the 3/4 answers an interesting question, which is, should you read 4 equal 10, a well-known mathematical identity, in English or in Hebrew, or whatever your favorite language is, or Hebrew or Arabic? Because 4 usually is not equal to 10. And one is telling you that a 10-dimensional system is equal to a 4-dimensional system. Well, you may say, well, I heard about that. We know about torus compactification. But you should know that when you look at a system where you have toroidal compactification, but you leave 4 dimensions as macroscopic, the high energy behavior is of a 10-dimensional system. So the fact that you put a cutoff, IR cutoff on your torus doesn't stop you from knowing at short distance that you have many, many degrees of freedom. So this is something special which happens here. It's not like in a usual compactification. And what happens is the correct answer is, you read it in Hebrew. Of course, I could have written the opposite and the verdict would be differently. So it's actually 10 is equal 4. This is really a 4-dimensional system. Now, because it came in previous lectures, the issue came up, I think the misused terminology of deconfinement, which was discussed, and we're in QCD, so we're interested in that issue. The theory starts off as being a conformal theory. So it was not confined, and it didn't ask anybody to come and liberate it, so it'd be deconfined. It was a priori a conformal theory. However, what does happen? What does happen, you have a system whose number of degrees of freedom doesn't know about the color. It's of order 1 in the color. And this reminds us of QCD spectrum. When you think of the singlets, they're all of order 1. When does an n squared come in? And n squared comes in when you liberate, as Parisi and Khabiba were thinking about, the quarks and gluons. In that case, you can count the number of degrees of freedom at short distance by using the gluons and n for the quarks. So there are here things which are resembling to deconfinement. And that is, I think, the main reason why people call it, because you have the 0 degrees of freedom become n squared, and maybe those are the degrees of freedom out of which the system was really made out of. So at this stage, we went from a large black hole to a small black hole, and therefore we can now sail up to infinite energies and let the temperature increase. So the title of the talk is Phases in Gravity. So let me show you a phase diagram. Here is the string coupling. Here is the dimensionless quantity made out of the energy and the IR cutoff of the system. And let's look what we have learned. So when the coupling is not strictly zero, I will say a few words about the coupling strictly zero. What we learned is that the 10-dimensional graviton system can go through a Hagedorn part, can go through a Schwarzschild black hole, which is small, and then it goes through large black holes, and from here it can sail to infinite energy. It's protected, it has a field theory description. The field theory description has positive specific heat, no intrinsic block on the energy. The temperature would be a quarter, no? It should be a quarter, because S goes, I don't see a chalk here, S goes like e to the 3/4, so the temperature should go like 1 minus 3/4, it's a quarter. So you should get the temperature going like e to the 1/4, and that's how it should increase. I tried yesterday to check it. I got T to the 1 minus alpha. Check it again and see. I think it's T to the 1/4. So this is what one gets here. You notice that if you increase the coupling a little, you can even not go through strings at all, because the black holes will form well before the Hagedorn temperature. And in that case, you go directly from gravitons to black holes. And at the end, you leave through large black holes. Now, there are several things which could interest you or could interest us in a workshop on lattice calculations. So first, the transition in gravity was shown by Hawking and Page many years ago. The transition in gauge theory, that if you have a problem on a sphere, go to large N and see the transition occur, that actually was not really demonstrated. And maybe in this ideal world where you can handle such systems, you could see that was not predicted in gauge theories. People didn't think of that transition. We know already from Gross and Witten many years ago that N equal infinity may allow a phase transition. There it was a third order phase transition. Here it's a first order phase transition. It's something more substantial. People try to relate it also to the distribution of eigenvalues and so on. But I think it's an open, interesting problem in this field. Then on top of it, you can ask what happens when you take the coupling smaller and smaller. In particular, why not take it zero? So when you take the coupling zero, as we learned from the lectures we had before, we know that the geometrical picture is terrible. I mean, we can't trust it. But on the other hand, what happens, by the way, you should tell me how much you want, because, okay. So in that case, where was I? Remind me. What was I talking about?
Well, you can guess lesson to find the phase transition.
If you want.
If you're going to smaller coupling.
Yes, so if you go to coupling zero,
we don't know
what's going on. Excellent.
Solve it.
Okay, so if you look at coupling zero, there is a work of Zumbaugh, which was afterwards followed by a work by Aroni, Minwala, and two other co-authors. I forgot, maybe you remember the names? Okay, but who... And the idea was actually very interesting. The idea was the following. They said, how do you go to a G equals zero limit of a gauge theory? Well, if you put strictly G equals zero, then all what you have is actually U1 to the N squared minus 1. That won't be interesting. But they said, impose Gauss's law and require that all states be SUN gauge singlets. And let that be the feature which leads you to G equals zero. So don't look at all states which you can make. Just look at those which you can make out of singlets of SUN. And that turns out a very interesting mathematical problem, which actually a lot can be said about it. And you can see rather surprising behavior happening in that type of system. So that's another thing which could be done. So I think I motivated for you now that this diagram coming from the gravity side, after you heard the lectures on ADS CFT, actually, that's when that student presented that work, he had the right behavior. It's just nothing that we expected. So if you wish, gate theory have enormous surprises in them. Really far from what one thought. It would be great if that could be substantiated. Also in direct calculations in that model. The problem is that when one does not like diagonalizing a Hamiltonian and just looking at the states and putting them in bands, but when one does a canonical ensemble, you actually have here a first order phase transition, which happens, it's a typical Maxwell construction situation. So now I'm drawing the temperature as a function of energy forever because I have no blocks, I have no bounds. So we start through massless field theory, go through strings, go to small black holes, and then to black holes in anti-de Sitter. And when you do the Maxwell construction, you see that you're skipping the string phase and the black hole phase. And they're actually the most interesting ones to see, because to see three quarters in a three quarter system is not very interesting. Now, to see the 10 tenths, I think the 9 tenths is very interesting, actually. It would be great to be able to do it in a direct Hamiltonian. But two of the phases get lost. And you understand here why the Hawking page transition is one dimension, is a first order transition, because that is the structure you have. And again, because the subject of the talk, the name of the talk is phases of gravity, so I'm showing you that you can get things we are familiar with from gravity. Okay, now there are many nice things one can get here. One can argue many things using random walk pictures. I won't do that. I will just want to tell you a few things, as this was phases, that you should still be aware of. Consider a string gas first, and think that the string lives in a volume which is infinite. Then in one situation, it would clearly not be an extensive system. What would be that situation? If in each volume there would be only one king, which would be the longest string possible, then when you bring two together, they can't coexist. It will have to be the longest of all strings which leads the system. And that's not an extensive type of behavior. So the question is, what happens? Do strings behave this way or not? And now the finite size effects play a role. And I just want that you should remember that in string theory we have extended objects. Extended objects can be very long, so it looks like infrared. But they weigh a lot of energy, so they have a very high energy. Now, if your system is such that the system is not large enough, so strings won't, by their random walking, touch their boundaries, things will behave differently than if the system has strings which are curled in a certain region and never get to touch the boundary. And actually, when you do the analysis in this situation, and you find that if the strings are self-contained, like they are here, then the way that you get energy distribution of the strings is the low energy stuff takes its piece, a small piece, and then the rest goes to one large string. And that is a situation where the system is not extensive. And in such a situation, if you look at the more details of the diagram, what you may find is that the specific heat of the system is actually negative. However, you may also be in a situation when the system is not contained, when the string reaches the boundary, has a lot of time to curl inside, and in that case you get a much better distribution. You begin to activate many more degrees of freedom, the specific heat becomes positive, and the energy distribution is now what you want. It will be equipartitioned between the various type of strings. So in that case, the thermodynamic behavior is better, but all this depends on finite size effects, which are related, how is the energy related to the length of the system. Again, it's happening because the system has an IR-UV connection that you are so sensitive to such questions. In other systems, this may not be the case. So I can conclude here. So I flash here another phase diagram, so you see that there are now lots of phases, like the I saw here phases in condensed matter. I've seen in John talk a lot of phases, so you can have here lots of phases. And I want to give the following conclusion. I want to say that even though we work a lot about our differences, I think when you study this subject, you learn that there is more unity in our ideas than there are differences. The experiences one learns one from the other are actually extremely useful, and it makes no sense to say it's only this or that or only this. I want to say again that I'm for no scale. I don't remember if I said it before. And I want to say that there are open problems also on the string side, because for Schwarzschild black holes, for little string theories, for PP backgrounds, the exit strategy, like in other situations, is not yet clear. So it's not yet obvious to me how these systems handle themselves. So there's really a lot more that we need to understand. We got an understanding in a very small, hopefully finite measure of phase space of series, but a very small phase space. That's it.
Before